Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode 43 called Medical Prescribers, Listen to Your Patients. I've been wanting to do a show on this for a long time, so I've tried to put everything together that I thought would help. So here we go. When patients are turning to online forums for support from harm due to medications, there is a huge problem. The online support groups have people from all over the world begging for help to get off their medications. Yet the majority of medical professionals who are prescribing these medications don't have a clue how to really taper people off of them. Sure, some of them may give you a taper schedule, but it may be too fast. None of them are taking into consideration what is going on in a person's life or their genetics as to how fast or how slow they can go, nor are they considering any underlying issues that these drugs may have caused, like gut issues, vitamin and mineral deficiencies, a thyroid condition that went unnoticed, Lyme disease, etc. When we had our first hearing at the Massachusetts State House in 2016, I asked Jocelyn, who has the BenzoBrains YouTube channel, to send me the list she had compiled of reasons people were put on benzodiazepines. I'm going to try to read from that list pretty quickly. And mind you, all of these people were prescribed, were kept on them, and are in the groups because they are suffering, trying to get off, and suffering now with multiple symptoms. So here we go. ADHD, adhesion surgery and recovery, adverse reaction to anesthesia, adverse reaction to caffeine, adverse reaction to Effexor, adverse reaction to Levaquin, adverse reaction to NSAIDs, adverse reaction to Paxil, adverse reaction to steroids, adverse reaction to Zoloft, agoraphobia, alcohol-induced panic, alcohol withdrawals, alpha-wave sleep disorder, Alzheimer's, Ambien withdrawals, antidepressant withdrawal, back injury, benign heart PVC, bipolar, breakup, cancer, cervical dystonia, chest pain, chronic fatigue, chronic pain, closed head injury, comorbidity, complex PTSD, Crohn's, death of a loved one, depression, diverticulitis, divorce, dizziness, dyspareunia, Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, hypermobility, epilepsy, ER visit, fibromyalgia, flu, glucogen storage disease, H. pylori, high blood pressure, IBS, indigestion, insomnia, itching, low B12, low iron, lupus, Lyme, major depressive disorder, meningitis, menopause, meth withdrawal, migraine, misdiagnosed anxiety, mitral valve prolapse, motor tics, nausea, neck spasms, nerve pain, night terror, parasomnia, nocturnal myoclonic seizures, OCD, opiate addiction, opiate withdrawal, oxycodone withdrawal, pain, panic attacks, parasites, perimenopause, period limb movement during sleep, PLMD, PMDD, PMS, pneumonia, postpartum insomnia, POTS, psychosis, PTSD, rash, restless leg, runny ear, schizophrenia, seizures, shortness of breath, shyness, side effects of Abilify, side effects of Lexapro, side effects of metoclopramidine, side effects of Wellbutrin, single panic attack, sleep paralysis, spasms, stiff back and muscles, stress, tachycardia, tension headache, tinnitus, tongue pain, Tourette syndrome, transition on to SSRI, trauma, trouble falling asleep, twitching, shakes, undiagnosed infection, vertigo, vestibular problems, visual processing disorder, and vulvodynia. Now, I'm sure since she did that list in 2016, we've had more reasons people got put on. But you can see that this class of medication is given out for just about any reason, and you can look at a lot of them and see their original problems should have been dealt with and not just covered up with a benzo, which then caused more harm. So here are just a few samples of people who were prescribed a benzodiazepine. A woman went into her doctor for her annual appointment, but she happens to know one of the nurses. The doctor sees her crying with her friend because of the death of a grandchild. It is normal to cry. It is normal to be sad. This woman wasn't there to get any medication, just for her annual physical. She never said that she was there for depression. He assumed that she needed it because she was crying. This woman, after years of being sick on both drugs, and, you know, where he prescribes her, you know, the antidepressant and a benzo, so the woman, after years of being sick on both the drugs, withdrawing and then recovering, became a nurse. But years of her life were taken away. My own cousin went to a doctor with a rash. She worked for the Boston Public School System. Her doctor did some blood work, but then tilted her head and said, "I know you have family members who don't like this class of medication, but it will help you." She gave her a prescription for Ativan. That was on a Friday evening. Obviously, my cousin didn't take it. Come Monday morning, the doctor called with her results and said she had Fifth disease, which many kids get in the school system, and she got it from them. My cousin never went back to her again. This is just one example of someone who went in with a rash. It's heartbreaking to see others in the groups that are suffering years out from a minor rash. An orthopedic doctor is having, as he says, minor stress in his family. His doctor prescribes him Xanax. He starts to develop anxiety and panic. He gets on the support groups. He sees it's the Xanax making him sick. He tries to taper off, and it is too painful. He goes to a place to come off quicker, thinking this will help. He suffers after being withdrawn, and he can't believe doctors don't know about this. I should have known that the last time he called me and he said, "I have a wonderful wife, great kids, a beautiful home and money," but he was so ill from benzo withdrawal. We learned later he succumbed to medication-induced suicide. This should never have happened. Even as a doctor, he was shocked how sick coming off these drugs can make a person. A few of us had tried to encourage him and tell him that he would get better, but there was just no medical support for him. Doctors just wanted to give him more medication, and yet he knew in his heart Xanax had ruined him. In my own case, after the delivery of my second child, I didn't feel well. Because I'm a woman that had just had a baby, it must be in my head. I was prescribed Ativan right in the hospital. I didn't take it, but I continued to feel that very heavy feeling, and I only weighed 105 pounds. I called my OBGYN. Because I didn't have a fever, he wasn't concerned. I was told to see a psychiatrist. Months later, I finally go because I'm still having the heavy feeling. I'm prescribed Ativan on the first visit and told when I come back, she'll figure out a medication to give me. This playing around with medication goes on for a year. Thank goodness I reacted poorly to everything she tried to give me, but I'm still trying to look for why I feel so bad. And now I've developed anxiety, panic attacks, agoraphobia. I constantly question this doctor that I believe the medication is making me sick, and I hear, "If you were a diabetic, you would have to take your insulin, wouldn't you? Well, you need to take Ativan for the rest of your life." Eventually, I read an article in Prevention Magazine which talks about a woman having a slight infection in the uterus after childbirth, and that's, you know, one of the ways. And I immediately call my internist and I ask him to prescribe the medication that is mentioned, and he did. Within 5 days, I feel perfectly healthy again. The heavy feeling is gone and it's over. I stop taking the Ativan, and what a mistake. I have a massive panic attack. I call my psychiatrist, and instead of her telling me, "You can't just stop taking Ativan," she tells me to go to an emergency room and get checked out and never question her again, and that I need to take Ativan for the rest of my life. The drugging and trying of different medication goes on for 9 more years until finally my new OBGYN tells me I'm on one of the most addictive drugs ever made. There's no information back then about withdrawing, and this doctor wanted me off in 2 weeks, which would have killed me. Let me also mention that when I went to this new OBGYN, it was 6 months after my hysterectomy. I had always had very normal menstrual cycles, but over the years on Ativan, I bled more and more and more, and then came the hysterectomy. Benzodiazepines have an effect on a woman's menstrual cycle. This was known 1 year after benzodiazepines hit the market. I lost a great career in human resources and was never able to have any more children. A woman goes into her doctor's office thinking she has a sinus infection. Her doctor prescribes her Cipro, a fluoroquinolone antibiotic. This class of medication has a black box warning and shouldn't be the first choice for what might be a sinus infection. She has a terrible reaction to it, and her doctor prescribes her steroid. She has more reactions, so now her doctor prescribes her Klonopin. This woman's life is falling apart. She was a healthy, active grandmother before these meds, and now she's a shadow of herself. She's unable to work. Her friends are disappearing. Her children are wondering what's wrong with her, and her husband, in desperation, sends her to a rehab where she's yanked off the Klonopin. She comes home ill and is put back on Klonopin again. Then comes another rehab. Thankfully, in this rehab, one of the aides whispered to her that it's the Klonopin making her sick. She came home again, back on Klonopin, and weaned off of it. She had a very tough recovery because she was dealing with side effects from three medications. To this day, she doesn't believe she ever had a sinus infection. You know, I would say one of the biggest reasons people are in these support groups is to counteractivate side effects from other drugs and minor issues that didn't require a benzo. And if it did, it should have been very short term. The amount of suffering people have endured because of lack of knowledge is disgraceful. When someone is under minor stress, there is no need for a benzodiazepine. There are plenty of natural supplements that work fine. There are breathing techniques, dietary changes that help, yoga, exercising, etc. None of these are ever suggested. It might be easy for you to prescribe a pill, but listen to the podcasts that have been done, especially episode 40 by a nurse who was treated so cruelly by the medical profession and made so ill, she lost years of her life. Today, through the help of a functional medicine doctor, she is healthy, thriving, working full-time, going to school to be a nurse practitioner, and will do functional medicine for a living. When someone comes to you with a problem and you don't know what is wrong, why do you feel you have to prescribe a benzodiazepine and just assume it's all in their head? That person walks out of your office trusting the fact that you had their best interest in mind when you prescribed the tranquilizer, not knowing that you yourself are not fully educated in what these drugs are capable of doing. You don't even offer them an informed consent to help them educate themselves in making choices whether to fill the prescription or not. You have no clue to the potential dangers of taking a benzodiazepine for more than 2 to 4 weeks, and also the fact that when they left, and if they came back with more complaints, you have no clue it's the drug that you have prescribed that is causing their issues. So you write out another prescription, perhaps for an antidepressant, an antipsychotic, a sleeping pill, a beta blocker. This cycle has to stop. Then on the other hand, when they want to come off this medication that is making them sick, you either don't believe the medication is making them sick, or you can't help them because you don't know how. Maybe in your limited information about these pills, you tell your patient they can just stop, or they can come off in a couple of weeks. You again are causing this person more harm. This person can no longer work. They are asking you to fill out disability papers for them, and you tell them you don't feel they are disabled, when in fact this person came into your office with a simple problem, and you alone are now responsible for their ill health, their loss of family and friends, their loss of their job, and even their loss of their home. You need to take responsibility for the drugs that you are prescribing. Show compassion to the people you have harmed. Educate yourself and be there for these people as they fight to regain their health and their lives again. If all of us could find scientific medical information so easily on the internet, why can't you find it? You can take an hour out of your life to research the drugs you are prescribing and listen to people who are actually taking them and not the pharmaceutical companies that are telling you how safe they are. In 2020, the FDA began requiring benzodiazepines to be labeled with a warning that physical dependence can occur within days or weeks, and that stopping them abruptly can lead to life-threatening seizures. As for those that are psychologists and psychotherapists, it is your job to listen to people and try to believe and understand them. When somebody finds a good therapist who understands benzo withdrawal, they are worth their weight in gold. There is such a need for people who have an understanding therapist in their corner. Listen to episode 39, Jennifer Swankowski, PhD's podcast. She is a victim, advocate, and author. I strongly suggest you get her book, In the Waiting Room, My Recovery Through Medication Injury and Benzodiazepine Withdrawal. Many people don't have the support of family and friends, so they need a therapist to help them deal with the devastation of finding themselves in this horrible situation where many have lost loved ones, jobs, and even their homes, all because they took a pill that they weren't warned about of the potential devastating withdrawal. For over 25 years around the world, people, organizations, support charities, etc., have been putting out information to educate not only those patients suffering, but the medical profession. The ASTRA manual has been available since, I believe, 2009. This manual has been translated into 13 or 14 languages now. Professor Ashton was kind enough to write this manual not only for medical professionals, but also so a layperson could understand it. She also didn't want her manual used, as she said, as a lawnmower manual that had to be adhered to. She believed in a patient-guided taper, and her two-week tapers was just a guide. We know in the UK, most of the organizations suggest 3 to 4 weeks before making a cut. Here are just some websites you can go to for help. www.benzo.org.uk, which is the oldest website with information about benzodiazepines. www.benzoreform.org, the Alliance for Benzodiazepine Best Practices, which is really more for medical professionals, but anybody can go to it. www.benzoinfo.com, Benzodiazepine Information Coalition. You can get a download of the Ashton Manual. www.cepuk.org, which is Council for Evidence-Based Psychiatry. www.benzobuddies.org, the largest online support group, and there are many others on Facebook. www.benzobookreview.com, where you can get the softbound copy of the Ashton Manual. There are many other sites which you can learn about from all of these sites that I've mentioned. There are also books that have been written by survivors on the subject. I'm going to try to list quite a few of them, and I'm sure there's more. The Accidental Addict by Di Perrett and Di Russell, which is out of Australia. Benzo Junkie by Beatrice Foss, again out of Australia. Prisoner on Prescription by Heather Jones from the UK. Back to Life by Pam Armstrong, also from the UK. Alive and Kicking by Peter Ritson, also from the UK, and Tranquilizers and Antidepressants by Shirley Trickett from the UK. The Judas Window by Felicity Bailovich, and Beyond the Barrier by Felicity Bailovich. She is from South Africa. And Addiction by Prescription by Joan Gadsby's from Canada. Some of the other ones, I'm not sure where they live. I know where some are. But Worse Than Heroin, The World's Most Difficult Addiction Problem by E. Robert Mercer. Recovery and Renewal by Baylissa Fredericks. The Benzo Book by Jack Hobson's DuPont. Beyond Benzos by Tate Adams. The Benzo Monster by Susan Gordon. Death Grip, A Climber's Escape from Benzo Madness by Matt Samet. Overcoming Clonopin, Clonazepam Withdrawal. A Pharmacist's Story from Hell and Back by Daniel Sneeden. RPH, PharmD. Benzoland, How Doctors and Drug Companies Enslave Us by Richard Krasta. Walking Through the Valley of Benzo Hell, Surviving Benzodiazepine Withdrawal by Jonathan Baylor. Repairing the Benzo Blunder, A Mosaic of Recovery by Marjorie Merritt Carmen. The Benzo Devil, How I Recovered from Prescription Drugs by R.W. Farazan. Benzo Free, The World of Anti-Anxiety Drugs and the Reality of Withdrawal by D.E. Foster. Tranquilizer Free by Colby Steele. In the Waiting Room, My Recovery Journey Through Medication Injury and Benzodiazepine Withdrawal by Jennifer Swankowski, Ph.D. Blood Orange Night, My Journey to the Edge of Madness by Melissa Bond. Now, there are even more books, and then there are books written by medical professionals. I implore you to search on Amazon for whatever you get, books to look at and all the information available. There are documentaries. Now, these are the ones strictly about benzodiazepines. The Benzodiazepine Medical Disaster by Shane Kenny is on Vimeo. This is Life with Lisa Ling, The Benzo Crisis. I believe you can look at it on YouTube, that episode. As Prescribed by Holly Hardman just premiered at the Sheffield Doc Fest and the Berkshire International Film Festival. Expect more announcements about the film's availability in the coming weeks. You could see the trailer at asprescribedfilm.com. There is a crisis happening right now, especially here in the United States. Good patients are walking into their doctor's office and a sign is in the waiting room stating they are no longer going to be prescribing benzodiazepines, and they list the names. So for years, these drugs have been prescribed, and now people are showing up in our groups being cut off. This is so wrong. How about either you help the patient slowly wean off, or since it's gone on for so long, that person is left alone. Educate them, let them make their own choice. Withdrawing is a choice and something not everyone can do, depending on their living situation. Some have been on 20, 30, 40 years. It's a decision that should be made with their doctor and family, And if they can't handle the taper, let them stay on it. How about with new patients? They are the ones you can educate and not prescribe, or only prescribe for short term. No one is denying that these drugs have their place and can be very helpful, but they were only intended for 2 to 4 week usage. No one should be cut off from this medication. I have always said I am for the responsible use of this class of medication. I've seen too much suffering over the years. There is a group on Facebook called Souls Lost to Psychiatric Drugs. Too many have succumbed to medication-induced suicide because they were so ill from coming off this class of medication, or they were cut off cold turkey. None of them were mentally ill. In fact, when you read their stories, most were put on for minor reasons and then became ill, and the unknown of when the withdrawal will end is just too much for them. It's time we do something, and before a pill is given, educate yourself, educate your patients before unnecessary suffering happens. I want to thank you all for listening, and I hope this makes a difference in your practice as you go forward. And for those who have been harmed, I hope sending this to your prescriber or counselor will help. Stay tuned for our post-show conversation. Well, I just finished this episode that I wanted to do by myself. I've been wanting to do it for a long time, and Garrett knew I was working on something, but he didn't know what. Yeah. So, Garrett, what do you think? I mean, I didn't want to show anger in it, but I wanted to get my point across. How was I?
I certainly think you got your point across, and you're right. I didn't, up until walking in here, other than seeing your show notes, like a little bit of your show notes, I didn't know what this was going to be about. I just knew, even when you were in Florida the last time, you talked about this is an episode that you wanted to do, so mm-hmm. it's something that you were kind of in the works on. You had wanted to do it for a long time, and I think you got the point across to it.
Right.
And it kind of has like the dual effect of, you know, if you listen to all of our podcasts, this is helpful for you, but then also it's, if you're a prescriber of these of benzodiazepines, it's something that you can listen to and go, like, this is how people feel.
Right. And you had said to me, well, you know, you're doing this for prescribers, but what about the audience that listens? And I had said, well, this is a great episode to send to their doctor to maybe listen. And then you hope they'll maybe go listen to people who have suffered. I mean, we have some great podcasts. I get some wonderful notes from people, you know, how they listen to them over and over again. And which is kind of years ago, you know, when you used to say, you know, people are calling the house too much and we had to stop that, to get people's stories out there so they can listen to somebody that encourages them, you know, that we try to get people that have recovered. I mean, there's just so many out there, and I don't have a lot of time to always get them done.
Right. How did you feel about doing a solo podcast? I know you hate doing them. Like, it's something, because you're always good when you have somebody else on the line talking, but
right.
we only have, what, maybe 3 or 4 episodes of the 43 now where it's just you?
So. Right. I, as you know, I always get nervous before we do them. And, of course, now I have Invisalign in my mouth thanks to benzos. My teeth all moved, mm-hmm. and they're correcting really fast, which I'm happy about, but it gets a little difficult to talk. So I hope I got it done okay. This was a very important episode to me because people go to try to talk to their doctors and they're just shut down. They don't listen. No, the drugs aren't doing that. We've heard that, you know, you've met so many people for years, you know, as we've been at the State House. And it's sad that nobody's listening. There's so much harm that, I mean, you know what? Let's look at this list.
The list. I was wondering what this piece of paper was when you brought it in, and I can't believe that's what it is.
I mean, when you look at the reasons people were prescribed, and I'm sure if Jocelyn did another thing, it would be ridiculous. I remember somebody once telling me, well, I was prescribed because my doctor said I lost too much weight. And another one said, well, I wasn't losing weight. They're prescribed for anything. This is like, it's maddening.
Right. I think common sense would tell you if a drug is being prescribed for such like a wide spectrum of like underlying things, then it must be being misused, right? I mean, there's no way a drug should be able to be used for, I'm just looking at two things from across the table, ADHD,
mm-hmm.
and then
Even for Alzheimer's.
PMS. Yeah. So that's the next thing I see on the list. Yeah.
So even for Alzheimer's, you know, I look at, you know, that and my gosh, I mean, it, we have people, actually, when we interviewed Mike Mosher, the attorney.
Mm-hmm.
He had a client once, he told me that they thought she had dementia, but she was on Xanax. And when the family got her off the Xanax, guess what? She's as clear-headed as can be. And so, you know, when you look at half the reasons, you know, again, the rash, you know, death of a loved one. I mean, we've seen here in our area in Boston when tragedies have happened and benzos were prescribed. And then they got right off. You know, you don't, how is it, you know, years later, they're still on them. And I don't know, it's very upsetting. So I hope this episode does something. So one thing I want to ask you, because we are doing this on August 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything in the State House has happened.
Yeah.
And so this is kind of a great way to let people know what was the decision on our bill.
Yeah, so this legislative session, which is 18 months long, ended this morning at, the last session went for almost 24 hours, so it ended around 8:30, 9 o'clock this morning, and so the bill didn't go through this year.
Right.
And I think if you ask kind of anybody who is a veteran legislator, it just, I don't want to say it would never had a chance, cause that's not true, but it's so difficult, and
Because it's medication. And we're up against mass medical.
Mass medical, everything. I mean, even if you had, all of a sudden mass medical was on our side, let's say. Mm-hmm. It's never going to happen, but mm-hmm. Let's just say.
I'm going to shoot for it next time. I mean, I'm going to contact
who them. Knows, maybe someday. Even then, it's so difficult because of, you know, sometimes just the priority is not there. And you could see with this session, we even had bigger bills that just died this morning at 9 o'clock this morning, where we spent $1 billion in a bill and didn't get it done.
Hmm.
So it goes nowhere now.
Do you know on the opioid bill, which finally did pass in Massachusetts, how many times it took for that to go through? And the governor was behind that, and he didn't even pass the first few times, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really sure because I wasn't around, you know, leading up to that before. So, you know, I didn't see it going through the process, but I think the opioid thing, you know, bills can go pretty fast when, you know, the three main people, say the Senate President, Speaker of the House, and the Governor all want it.
Mm.
It can move amazingly quickly. And with the opioid epidemic, that's like one of those things where it's on TV every night. It's a constant concern.
Right. Well, you know, one of the things in As Prescribed that I loved in the As Prescribed documentary is Carol Fiola, Representative mm-hmm. Carol Fiola. And I think when people see how she addresses the doctors, she is tough. She is good. She went right at the doctors who were all saying, you know, how wonderful the drugs were. So
she's an incredibly effective legislator.
Oh, she's so
and
good.
I mean, you only met her that day, right?
I met her, yeah. And she's...
And
she's,
she leaves an impression on you, right?
She's
just that kind of person, so...
She does, yeah. And that's one thing when people see what we have been up against now. We've gone in four times, so we're going to do it again, right? It has to be filed by February. We'll do it again. We're not going to disappear.
Yeah,
so,
the bill's not going anywhere. I mean, we'll rewrite it again,
and rewrite it better.
Time. Yeah, but I think it's gotten better every time that we've tried to file it. I would have filed it. So,
all right. Yeah. So yeah, we'll do it, and going to work even harder. And we have two things. Sonia, who is fabulous, Sonia Stiblo, who is kind of took over when Dad got sick. She's not going to be as available to help anymore. So, I don't know if I'm going to be available to do a lot. I can do some, but we're going to need somebody in Massachusetts to step up and help us because I am leaving again for Florida Wednesday morning. This is Monday evening. And that's going to be my life going back and forth to Florida to take care of my mother. And so we all have a lot of stress in our lives, and I'm trying to protect my stress levels. So I just can't take on any more than I can do.
Right.
Yeah. Anything else that we want to discuss before I leave? Even though you'd like me to do a podcast while I'm in Florida, without you there to help me, I'm just not going to be able to do it.
We'll talk about it, I guess, when you're down there. I think right now it seems like it's too much, but you never know.
I have too much when I go down there.
We certainly have the capability to do it while you're down there, yeah. Me from here.
Yeah, and we won't release this, even though we're doing it August 1st. We'll see, you know, when you get it out there and send it to me, and I can put it out from wherever I am. So, all right. So the one thing I want to say to everybody, I get some nice, you know, comments. I see them on YouTube. I don't really get to see a lot over on the podcast app, but we're asking that people subscribe to both the podcast and the YouTube. I think we still, Garrett, are we in the top 10 on the podcast of and the health? What category are we in? Health,
I think,
and
self-help.
Self-help. And yeah. We've always kind of maintained, even though we're not too consistent, we're in the top 10 usually.
Yeah, like we're around there.
Okay. So, you know what? Let's, you know, if you can mention to people to subscribe to both the podcast and the YouTube, that really helps. And, you know, we're going to come up with some really good shows. I've had people contact me that want to be on. I just can't get to everybody. I still have a list of people that we're just going to have to do it slowly, but we're going to get them all done. I can't thank you all enough for listening and sending them off to others to listen. And it's a great avenue if you have someone that doesn't believe you. Send somebody's story that at the end you're like, they got better. You know, they had help. But I'm not always saying that you have to have help to get better, because God knows we've had some that were just left on their own and they struggled and they got better. So just continue listening, and we're going to continue putting out some good podcasts. Thank you all very much.